Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for everything outdoors.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
Overdrive Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Whether you are new to predator hunting or looking to upgrade your equipment, Predator Hunter Outdoors will have you hunting after the sun goes down. Carrying a full line of lights, night vision, and thermal optics, along with tripods, calls, mounting systems, and more, check them out at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com or on Facebook at Predator Hunter Outdoors. Use promo code OVERDRIVE2021 for 20% off your order. Want to lengthen your time in the field and shorten your scouting time? Not only does the HuntWise app show you property boundaries, landowners' names, and in some cases even their phone number, but using the app will show you the wind direction on the map of the place you want to hunt. And the HuntCast feature shows peak movement times for various species, including predators. Get the HuntWise app at www.huntwise.com, the Google Play Store, or the Apple App Store. For only $59.99 a year for Pro or $119.99 a year for Elite. Use promo code OVERDRIVE20 for 20% off an annual membership.
Good evening, everybody. It's me, Josh Mapes, again. And this week, I wouldn't call him a co-host. He's actually more of a guest to me, Mr. Kevin Rott.
I keep slipping every time. Pretty soon, I'm just going to be the guy in the corner.
Well, I guess it depends on the topic. What have you been up to lately, Kevin?
A lot of work. I tell you what, I've been loving this cooler weather, though. We finally got like springtime weather. Today it smelled to me almost like fall. Mm-hmm. And I'm loving it because this is like perfect weather for me. I've been actually doing a lot of daytime coyote hunting. Went out this weekend, did a couple sets. Saturday night with Mike, but other than on the weekends, I've just been hunting daylight, very little nighttime hunting, doing, you know, stuff around the house outside and work in the shop here. That's about it.
Yeah, it's awful buggy out there now all of a sudden.
You know, Saturday night it wasn't bad at all, and we didn't have a lot of wind, but I didn't even have to use my thermocell. And then I went out yesterday evening for last light set, and the bugs weren't bad either. But, you know, I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah, they're starting the last coyote I shot, I don't know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. She was already loaded completely up with ticks and stuff. And that's probably, I mean, I love calling this time of year, but those coyotes are tick and flea infested a lot of the time right now.
I actually just went to the store last week and bought a big bulk size container of trash bags for that reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll use the rack, but if I'm going to not use the rack, I'll be throwing them in those bags. Right. Did you see that picture of the one JD posted today?
Yeah. I didn't click it to see what it was up close. Was that all tick babies like all over the bed?
I thought it was sand or something on the bed of the truck underneath it, and he said that was all baby ticks. I was like, holy crap,
that's disgusting,
that's nasty.
Yeah, so JD Pyatt with Icotech, he posted that picture. What is it, today, Monday the 23rd? Did he post that today or yesterday?
I think today, this morning.
Nasty. I mean, I thought the same thing. I thought it was sand, but I did not click on the picture, so just confirmed what I was afraid of.
Yeah, he says that'll be the last one he puts in his truck all the rest of the year until fall.
Fleas and ticks, man, they will transfer so quickly to another animal. Like our dogs, when I come home, let the dogs out, the first place they go is to the back of that truck where the coyote with the ticks and the fleas is.
Right.
And isn't mange also transferable?
Yeah, because it's like a parasite. That? Yep.
So you got to be careful with what you bring around your animals at home.
Right.
But you use a yellow bottle Sawyer's on your clothes, right?
I do. I got it right here, as a matter of fact.
So do you actually believe that stuff works for you?
Absolutely.
See, I wonder if I put mine, I don't do mine right or something then.
I think you don't, because the last time I seen you use it, you sprayed it on like bug spray just before it went out, and that's not not what you do.
You're supposed to treat your clothes, right?
Correct. You hang what I do with mine is I hang my clothes on the line out here on the clothesline, spray it down, you let it dry on there. And I'll do that maybe if I don't wash the clothes, I'll do it maybe twice a year. And Jeremy said he was already pulled like 6 ticks off him with the turkey hunting he's been doing.
Yep.
I haven't had a single tick on me yet. And I've been laying in tall grass, walking through tall grass. Mike and I were walking through some tall stuff Saturday night. Haven't had a single tick on me, but I treat my pants, my shirt. I have a hoodie that I treated. I treat all that with it.
That's the Sawyer's. What does that bottle say again?
It's Sawyer's Permethrin.
Permethrin
insect repellent.
Yeah, that's the same stuff I've got, and that's a trigger spray one. But I don't know. When we've been looking for mushrooms in the thick like briar patches and stuff, we've been coming out with ticks, and they're all the little tiny seed ticks.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're not paying attention, them things will bury you in you quickly.
I mean, that's one thing. I actually, now that we're talking about it, I never thought about, but I should treat my boots with it too.
Yeah, probably. They say
that way they aren't gonna come up the boots and onto my legs and stuff underneath the pants. But
I wonder what you'd do up in the UP to keep them from falling off those cedars when we drive underneath them. That was disgusting. I don't even remember, what was that? Probably 5 years ago? 4 years ago?
Probably, yeah, 3-4 years ago.
Holy cow, it's been a long time. It doesn't look like the UP trip is happening this year. We haven't even mentioned it or talked about it, but I think all of us have been pretty dang busy with other stuff.
Well, Tony and I talked about it here, I don't know, a month ago. He asked me if we were going to do that again this year or not. And I told him that I personally didn't know if it was really worth it, because that landowner has someone else on his property now. It sounds like fairly regularly.
Oh, that's right. You talked to him, what, last fall or something?
Matt went up there. Matt actually went out with the guy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So I don't know on one hand, it's nice to be up there, whether we hunt or not. On the other hand, if we want to actually go up there and hunt and actually kill something, I don't know if it's worthwhile.
Well, and that's what I was talking to Alicia about. It's going to cost us $400-500 worth of gas, I almost think.
Yeah, if we took Tony's truck again, probably. Well, yeah. How many miles is it? Do you remember?
I don't know. It's a 6-hour drive, isn't it?
Yeah, so 6 hours times 70 miles an hour is a guesstimate. That's 360 miles.
Yeah.
This truck probably gets about like ours, if not worse.
Yeah, not all the way there in the tank.
If I remember right, didn't we fill up twice each way?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're talking $4.60 a gallon right now.
And that might be even more expensive north of the bridge. It usually is.
I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah.
That's where fishing is right now. Like Owen has been asking to go almost every day. And I keep having to be like, dude, I can't keep stopping at the gas station with this price.
Is it that far of a drive for you to get to a body of water to fish?
The closest fishable body of water to me is probably 20 minutes.
That's not terrible, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's not terrible, but once or twice a week, that's doable.
Right.
The way we want to do it, whereas I come home from work, pack up the boat, we go fishing, that we can't do.
That's the nice thing about where I live. I mean, I'm like 2 blocks away from the lake. I mean, if I wanted to, I could walk down there and fish.
That's another lake I think I want to take the boys to this year.
You're always welcome to come on up and park at my house or do whatever you want to do. I was actually there's a store that is changing location by us called Water Dog Outfitters. And he actually is the one that sponsored or was part of the sponsorship group of that recent kayak tournament they had, where they had like 1,000 people fishing.
Yeah, tons of boats, I heard.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I went down there and checked out his new shop the other day. And I told him, I said, once he gets everything where he wants it, let me know. We'll come down there. We'll do a live thing and cover the store and what they have to offer and everything else. But I was looking at the kayaks in there and I was surprised. Some of them are actually more affordable than I thought. But I think the shortest one is like 10 foot. And I'm like, well, I have like a 5 foot box on my truck. And he's like, well, you put the tailgate down, that's almost 7 feet. You'd probably be all right.
Yeah, then you just strap it in.
Right. And I think some of his kayaks start at like 3 something. He says, but they aren't going to be real comfortable.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want something a little bit more comfortable, you're probably looking at a minimum of like 5. So, you know, sometime in the future, I may end up with one of those and try them. Then, of course, I looked at the Hobie, which has a rudder, a motor, has a live well. I think it has a bar on the back. And I was like, holy crap. I didn't even ask the price on that one.
A bar? Like, what do you mean a bar? Like a flotation bar?
I'm just being a smart aleck.
Oh, yeah. I thought
that thing's so loaded with stuff. I mean, and those guys that use those are, I mean, they're nice setups. Don't get me wrong. And those guys are serious. It's kind of, to me, that's like the fishing version of these guys that do the competition shoots at my local gun club. They're shooting 22 rifles that cost like over $1,000. And then they'll put a $2,000 scope on it. And all they do is shoot eggs with it. And I'm like, I get it. If that's your thing, you know, more power to you. But yeah, that's not me.
Think of how much money we got into thermals for coyotes, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the guns themselves, plus the thermals, plus the collars, plus the secondary thermals for scanning and, you know, everything else. Yeah, it's, you know, when I had my Chevy, I think the stuff I carried in my Chevy was probably worth more money than the Chevy.
That's how, yeah, for sure.
As a matter of fact, I know it is, because when I traded it in, they only gave me $5,500 for it. And I know darn well, between my gun, my suppressor, my thermals, the scanner and the scope, the case that it carries in, that right there, I can tell you, is probably over $5,000 worth of stuff.
Definitely.
That's why I see, you know, it makes sense to me for some of these guys to actually get insurance on that stuff. It's not a bad idea. I don't know why I haven't checked into it, but.
No, I know Bob Abbott had mentioned it quite a few times, and I don't even remember where he said he gets it from, but it's cheap.
Right. It'd probably be a worthwhile investment.
See, now remember when Steve, though, got his whole package, like everything he had in his truck stolen? They didn't take his gun, but they took like his backpack and his ball and everything right out of a local gas station parking lot. And go figure, that gas station didn't have any cameras pointed there.
Well, another guy, too, Dan Shaw, he parked at a park and ride somewhere and went hunting with some guys, and they actually cut his tonneau cover and got into the back of his truck. Now, if I remember right, he actually didn't get anything stolen, but if he would have had that stuff in there, probably would have been gone.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be careful.
I hate parking rides. I mean, I've done it before, but I do not like to leave my stuff anywhere like that.
I don't know how we got on this from kayaks. What are you looking for a kayak for? To fish out of, or just more to go, you know, get to a backside coyote calling spot somewhere?
Actually, I hadn't put hunting together with it at all. I actually just want to do it to fish, and just, I enjoy just being out on the water, to be honest with you, especially because I'm right at the mouth of the White River to the White Lake. So I like to go out on those backwaters when the water is high enough and just paddle around. It's good exercise. You get, you know, being out in the sun, the fresh air on the water. And if I can fish off it, that'd be awesome too. But I don't know. I just kind of like exploring, I guess you could say.
I got to imagine it'd be fun to fight a big fish in a kayak that just runs, because it'd probably just be pulling you everywhere.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
You could just leave it hooked up and choose your next destination point.
I know we've got some big carp out here. And aside from that, I mean, I know steelhead run through there. I've heard of a couple people hooking into sturgeon. You don't hear about it very often, but occasionally you hear about a sturgeon in White Lake. But I think the biggest fish that you're more likely to encounter on a regular basis is just some of those big carp.
Yeah, and the big pike. There's got to be some big northern pike living.
Yeah, there's some big pike around here. I know there's a guy I know, Fred Wink, that I used to work with, and he's been posting. He's been hammering some nice pike lately, like 30 inches plus.
Nice.
Really nice ones. And I think he's fishing off the channel over here on White Lake.
Well, and what's the guide company? 906?
906 Outdoors from up in the UP?
Yeah, he is. I watch his pictures every single day. That dude is a fish catching fool. Mm-hmm. Well, shout out to 906. I think it's 906 Hunting Company or something like that. Let me look real quick just to make sure. so I don't say it wrong here. We stayed at one Youper Outdoors 906. He is a guide service outfitter for fishing, ice fishing, bear hunts, all that stuff. I stayed at one of his cabins last year, and it was beautiful up there, just outside of Sini Wildlife Refuge, which, by the way, I read that that is closed this year.
Really? You know why?
Because of the guest area being under construction or something?
Oh, that could be.
I don't know, but we didn't see anything when we drove through there. We tried to fish some of the back ponds because there's only during certain times of the year, there's only certain ponds that were open. And that's when we were trying to get some fish to put on the fire. And we didn't catch any kind of fish in there. You could tell that the spots that you can fish get fished all the time. Yeah. Just with the trails knocked down through the woods and everything around them. But yeah, then we ended up going up the road, finding a little stream that cut under the road there. Caught a couple perch there, and that's what we did with them. But yeah, I've been watching the 906, and he's catching today. I think they got walleye, bass, pike, perch, like mixed bag all around. But that's Sunday. I went out with Kate, Clint, from Sandy the Tracker, my brother and sister-in-law, and we got on a couple big perch. I mean, I posted pictures of them. They're as big as my hand. They're 10-inch perch probably. Crappie, I think the biggest one we got was just under 12 inches. And we spent 5 hours out there, four of us together, and we brought in 51 fish in 5 hours. And that was fighting whitecaps and hard winds. I mean, my trolling motor was like tired after that day. And for anybody that doesn't do that a lot, that wind and sun will beat the crap out of you.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it doesn't seem like it would, you go home and you're exhausted after fighting through that.
Right.
But we ended up getting on crappie at like seven. No, we were out there from 1 o'clock until 6:30, and we found the crappie at about 4:30 or 5, between 4 and 10 feet deep. And we were throwing all kinds of different things. And once we got on those crappie, literally almost every single cast, somebody was catching a fish, and it stayed that way for 2 hours. But they had to go pick up their other daughter from work, and I figured we got 51 to fillet on a work night, so that wasn't, I can't complain about that too bad.
How did they come up with a name for that fish?
I don't know. Somebody said that tastes crappy, and that's how they spelled it, I guess. I don't know. That's the other thing, because everybody calls them something different, you know, not something different. It's all spelled the same.
Yeah.
But everybody from South, I hear, say crappie, and here it's crappie. I haven't heard anybody call it a crappie from Michigan yet.
You know, when I was growing up, I don't remember ever hearing anyone refer to crappie. I mean, we probably caught them all the time, but for me, it was always sunfish and bluegill, or perch. Those were probably the big three that we would catch on the lake.
Yeah.
And then, we'd go for suckers, and occasionally we'd go out for bass or something else, but
walleye.
I don't remember ever hearing that term crappie around when I was growing up.
Well, and my grandpa, I saw him this weekend for my mom's birthday, and he said, "Man, I've been watching all your fishing stuff, and I don't think I've ever caught a crappie." And he's 86, 83, 86, something like that. That's a lot of fishing for my grandpa to not ever catch a crappie. He said he's never seen a fish that looked like that. But where he's at, up north in Traverse City, I don't know. I don't know how far north they go, but I watch a lot of videos from like Canada and stuff. So you'd assume they're pretty much in any body of water. But I don't know that for sure. We'll see, because I'm hoping to go up to the cottage sometime this summer when it's not going to be 400 degrees. But comfortable on the water,
right.
And take a week with the family, go up there, bring the boat, and do a bunch of fishing.
Have you ever trout fished in a stream?
Yes.
Have you?
Not in a long, long time. I used to do it more when we'd go camping. I would always go camping with my aunt and uncle, cousin Tim, my grandparents. And when we'd go out west and stuff and stay at certain campgrounds, and there was a stream nearby, we were all out there fishing.
I've always thought it'd be kind of cool to go up and try and find the streams and the spots where I used to fish with my dad up in the UP.
Yeah.
Which that was over by Sidnaw, Lance, Bruce's Crossings area.
No idea.
It's actually not terribly far west of Don's place.
Okay.
But we had a couple of streams up there that we used to fish all the time. The Jumbo, the Sturgeon, the Ontonagon, and the Perch were the three streams that we used to fish up there all the time. And I enjoyed the heck out of that. And I think it'd be kind of cool to go back up there and see if I could find some of those same spots that we used to fish.
Those are names of
streams,
not fish.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, the Jumbo River, the Perch River, the Ontonagon River, and the Sturgeon River.
I never knew that those were. What's the one that you drive over going west on two? The big isn't deep down. Two-hearted?
I think that's Two-Hearted, isn't it?
The one that's way down below you? I thought that was Cut or something like
that. Oh, it could be the Cut River. Yeah.
Okay. There's probably trout up in those.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Coming right off the lake.
Yeah.
Every time we've gone up there, we've never made time for anything but shooting coyotes and maybe going and finding mushrooms.
Right.
And sleeping, going driving around, knocking on doors.
Right.
I don't know. I'm going to miss it this year, but.
We used to go up there and camp. Friends of ours had a cabin up there just outside of town of Sidnaw. And it was across the road. And then I think you went back like a mile and a half back on this two track. There was a small inland lake back there. And I think it was called Little Four Lake, if I remember right. It was kind of cool because they had one little beach on it. And then if you went out down the road further, went back in, there's a little boat launch, which was all like logs, but beautiful inland lake. And when we stayed at that cabin, I would ride my bike over there and fish all the time. And that's like when we were talking about fishing the other day, I think with
Ray Dancer.
Yeah, Ray, that we'd go out there in the evening and there's a grassy field there. I'd go find a bunch of grasshoppers, throw them on a hook and just throw them out there, because in the evening, two things would happen. One, bats would come out and start swarming over that lake, which is pretty cool. I tried to pop them with my BB gun maybe once or twice, but then the fish would just be popping at that water trying to catch the flies and everything. I mean, it looked like it was raining out there with how much the water was popping.
Yeah.
So you just get a grasshopper or a cricket, throw it on the line, throw it out there, and boom, I mean, you're catching fish.
No, that's animal cruelty.
What, putting a hook through a grasshopper?
Yes.
I did it gently.
Oh man, so some of our videos and our pictures, they just get ran over by anti-hunters.
Oh, I tell you what, the one that amazes me the most is the handshake video from your deer harvest this year.
It's at almost 49 million people now.
I know. For one, I wonder how the heck it's out there and getting all that exposure, but two, you know, it just brings out all the weirdos, like that lady that posted, was it over the weekend or was it today?
They keep calling me a wanker and I don't know why.
Probably British. But that woman gets on there and made a bunch of comments about it. I replied back, but I think she actually left the page or blocked us or something, because I tried to go to her profile page from Overdrive and it wouldn't come up. It said you're not able to view it. No. Either there, she blocked me. I don't know. But I tried to reply because I'm thinking, you know, that's the thing that gets me is all these people that are the antis. How many of them are vegans? And even if you're a vegan, you still eat something that was alive. Plants are living.
Facts.
And if you eat them, you're taking away food from an herbivore. So, I mean, like I said in the comment to her, it's a circle of life. That's how it's been since God created the earth. Everything is food for something else at some point or another, period. And I think someone made a comment on one of yours, other two. Oh yeah, you should just go buy your food at the supermarket.
They did say that. I'm like, where does that food come from?
Yeah, and it just brings back that old newspaper article. Yeah, you should go buy your meat from the stores where no animals were harmed. I'm like, what kind of ignorant comment is that to think that no animals were harmed when you buy food at a store?
Yeah.
For one, they're farm raised. Yes, you can get some, you know, small hobby farms where the animals are probably treated very well. Unless you buy Wagyu beef that where the they're free range and they get petted and brushed down and all that to help improve the fat content to make better beef. Other than that, if you're buying mass produced farm meat, those animals don't have a good life per se. I mean, yes, they're happy, healthy. There's regulations on the raising of them, et cetera, but they're not a wild free animal.
Yeah.
That's what we're hunting. That's what we're fishing for. That's what we're harvesting. And like I said in that comment, you have a personal connection to what ends up on your plate.
Yeah.
One way or another, you personally interact with that animal as it is in the wild, all the way from when you, you know, locate where you're going to hunt, you do the hunt, you harvest the animal, you process the animal, you cook the animal, and you eat the animal. That's pretty darn personal, as opposed to $4.99 a pound, please,
a
grocery store.
I talked to some guys at work about that today because, number one, we were talking about gas prices, going out fishing, and I said, you know, it's expensive right now just to go fishing with the gas price in the boat and the gas price in the truck. And they said, yeah, but you're spending time with your kids. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. That's why it's worth it to me. Plus, let's say I spend $20 on gas to go fishing. I'm still not going to get 100 fillets with $20 at the store that I can bread. Not good, fresh out of the water, perfect, you know, awesome fillets for my family. You're going to get some crappy tilapia fillets that, yeah, they might taste all right, but this stuff is so much better. I can't believe, and how many of them come at us with the, how can you kill such a poor defenseless animal? I can tell you right now, coyotes, not defenseless.
No.
Been near them when they were very defensive, not defenseless.
Right.
Deer, not defenseless. We have seen does kick the crap out of calls, trees, coyotes. We've seen them try to get.
We about that had that happen this weekend playing fawn distress. I thought for sure this doe was going to stomp the crap out of my collar.
Oh, yeah.
She came in ticked. And I can't tell you how many times we've been out where we use fawn distress and we thought we were going to get run over, attacked by a deer.
And you know those deer watching you because they'll sit there and stare you down, but they're paying attention.
Snort at you, stomp, everything else. So what, those ones I don't worry about as much as the ones that don't know you're there.
Yeah.
And they're just coming in full tilt boogie through the woods.
Those are the ones I hear usually before you see.
Right. And they're like, oh crap. Yeah, which way do you go? You just put your back against a tree and hope for the best.
The favorite is when it's summer and it hasn't rained in like a week and they're kicking dust everywhere go. And you don't even see the animal coming. You see the dust cloud coming across the field.
Yep.
But I don't know. There is, Kevin and I go about responding to anti-hunters totally different. Kevin likes to, I don't know, you like to engage them in conversation.
I start that way.
Yeah. I try to just make them leave our page. I mean, seriously, there's so many things that I don't agree with. But I, number one, don't take the time to watch anything about it. And number two, I dang sure don't take the time to sit there and write a comment, write a freaking book to the people who made that video, because you're not doing this stuff to me.
Right.
And I chose not to do anything with it. Why does it seem like the anti-hunters that is incapable, they're incapable of doing that?
I got into it on, actually, I think, you commented on a post as well. I think it was in Grand Haven Informed. Somebody got taught, huh?
The coyote?
I think that's what it was. And this, at first I thought it was a woman until I looked closer at the profile page because it sounded like a woman, but I looked closer at the profile page and it was a dude. But he got on there and just was ranting and raving about the more coyotes you shoot, the more they're going to be because it causes them to reproduce more and blah, 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 blah. And I tried to cite a few sources from the books that I've read. And he absolutely just, well, I'll trust facts over a book that somebody read. I'm like, where'd you read the facts? Come from a book or a printing of some sort? But I just eventually I just stopped and I said, hey, we'll agree to disagree. You have a nice day. But yeah, like you said, those people, they're it's a very extreme viewpoint they have, and they aren't willing to listen to anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, most of the hardcore anti-hunting groups, like, you know, PETA, Wolf Patrol, I'm sure there's exposed trophy hunting. I seen one today, I think it was today or yesterday, and I'm not trying to give this page credit, but I think the page is called Exposed Trophy Hunting.
Yep. And I've been on that one, I think.
They had a picture of a lion on there, and I'm trying to remember exactly how it was worded. Matter of fact, I'll find it real quick while we're chatting. But the comment that was on there just to me was oxymoronic. And I say that because the way they worded it kind of contradicted itself in terms of, you know, their point they were trying to make.
We see that in comments that people make on our page, though.
Oh, yeah, all the time. Right. But this one especially, and I'm trying to pull the page up here, but the comment was about rights. And it was almost about, here we go. Let's see if I can find it now. They were talking about, okay, so here's the quote from their page. It's a picture of a lion. Trophy hunters have absolutely no right to take what belongs to us, although they might think so. The picture, the caption on the lion is, your right to kill me does not exist. Now, so that first statement, trophy hunters have absolutely no right to take away what belongs to us. Who's us?
Yeah, that's us people.
Exactly.
The people of the world.
Exactly. God gave man dominion over all animals. Mm-hmm. Now, you take a lion, for example. They'll kill other animals on a pretty regular basis. That's how they live, whether it be for food or territory or mating purposes or just because they're having a bad day, they kill stuff. And right? It's
way uglier than what we do.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen a lot of videos of they eat an animal while it's still alive, and they start at the guts and work their way forward while this animal's sitting there just crying its eyes out.
And
right?
they grab them by the throat and just choke them to death.
Right. Yeah.
We don't do that.
Right. You know, most of your hunters want a good, clean, quick, ethical kill.
Yep.
Nature isn't that way. Nature is absolutely brutal.
And so we don't get it every time.
Right.
Nobody can lie to you. We don't get
that. But you try to.
Yep.
You know, so for one, to them to say what belongs to us, to me, that's contradictory because it doesn't belong just to the antis. It belongs to everyone in the world as part of nature. Mm-hmm. Now, there's laws that dictate that. We understand that. And I think a lot of people don't understand what trophy hunting. And I really don't like that term because of the negativity that's been associated with it lately, but what that type of hunting actually provides. There's actually a really good video out there about it. And I want to say it was from like College Humor, but it's an animated video where they talk about all the benefits of trophy hunting. And part of it is, and you can check all this out, you know, there's plenty of sources out there for it, but like, if you have an animal that say it's protected, it can't be hunted. Okay, boom. Now your hunters can't hunt it. There's no value in that animal to hunters. So the value to that animal to poachers, though, is still there and still high.
And now so even more because it's probably harder and more rare to get.
And poaching doesn't generate money, right? Hunting does. The money that's generated from hunting goes back to preserve land. It helps to preserve the animals. It goes into the industry to help make more hunting opportunities. The only way you can make more hunting opportunities is to have the animals, have the land to hunt the animals on. The other thing is too, and this is something, it's a guest that I'm hoping to get on here sometime in the near future. Stephen Curl is an example. He is a PAC, which is a problem animal control hunter in South Africa. He also is a guide. And he posts regularly of, obviously, he takes out man-eating animals. You have hyenas, you have hippos, you have crocodiles, you have lions that have actually been killing people. They've tried everything else they can to stop this animal from killing people. Nothing else is working. This is the guy they call. He comes in, takes those problem animals out. So as a guide, a lot of times, and I have friends that actually have hunted Africa, and they'll tell you about this. For example, this one guy, and I won't name his name because I don't want to get a bunch of grief to this guy or anything else. He was going to book a trip to Africa. He's been over there a lot. His guide calls him up and says, hey, are you interested in giraffe? Well, initially he had no interest in shooting giraffe, but he says, I have two bulls that are past mating age that are becoming problem animals. He says, I'll give you a good buy on taking these giraffe if you want. So he ended up taking the giraffe. Actually, I think they took two of them. He took one and so did his mom. So when he told me about,
Is this the lady, the older lady that's,
She took the big five in Africa at 80 years old.
Okay. And do you know what the big five is off the top of your head?
Cape buffalo, lion, cheetah or leopard. I don't remember what the other two are right now.
Okay.
But anyway, so I asked him, you know, when he told me they took these giraffe, obviously he was going to, I think he got a mount done of the giraffes. But first thing I asked him, I say, hey, did you eat it? He says the camp chef would not cook it for him. He says, you don't want to eat this. This bull is so old that he wouldn't prepare it for him. Now, that being said, another example, this all ties in together. Lion, rhino isn't one of the big five. I'd almost put money on that.
That's what it says. I'm looking right now. It says
because rhinos are more endangered.
It says in Africa, the big five game animals are the lion, leopard, black rhinoceros, African bush elephant, and the African buffalo. That could be wrong. That's just a quick Google search.
Right.
But yeah, go ahead.
So anyway, as an example, and this happened with a giraffe as well, but his mom also took a hippo. Couple of years ago, I think it was the last year before COVID kind of shut down the travel over there. And once they recovered the hippo, he said, it's amazing how many people showed up and how fast they had that animal processed and back to their homes for food.
The hippo
and giraffe was the same way. For anyone that follows MMA, you know who Matt Hughes is. You heard of Matt Hughes?
Oh yeah.
He actually had a show called Matt Hughes Uncaged where he did hunting, and he had an episode that you can look it up. He went over to Africa to help. He went on a hunting trip, but he was also there to try and help some villages that had some issues. Same thing. He shot a hippo.
Villages that had issues with problem animals or needed food?
Actually, a little bit of both. I think there are some other issues too. They're trying to help them get water, maybe work on planting crops and stuff like that too. It was kind of a humanitarian type thing, but at the same time, he had hunting opportunities. He shot a hippo, and I remember him talking about it on there. For one, they shoot the hippo because hippos kill a lot of people. I think they kill just as many, if not more, people in Africa than lions and a lot of other animals. I think hippo, crocodiles, and Cape buffalo are actually considered more dangerous than some of the other animals, kill more people. But anyway, of course, this is all on his video, how fast all these people showed up, how fast they pulled the hippo out of the water, processed it up. And he was just amazed. He's like, I can't believe it's almost, you know, over there in the bush in Africa, it's pretty primitive, but they do apparently have some form of communication where these people, they're like, hey, there's a hippo over at Kaudarabi Pond. And it's just like, all of a sudden you have like 100 people over there and they're happy as heck. They processed that animal. They got food to eat. They have an animal that was maybe killing their people that now is not a threat. And they got all this food.
I don't know that I'd want to eat that human eating one. Aren't you a cannibal at that point?
kind of like 7 degrees of separation cannibalism, but you know. But still, it's the fact that these animals get used, and I don't think a lot of people understand that.
Well, and that's even in that handshaking video. So for people that don't know what video that is, it's what, a 10-second clip of my hand going just nuts from after I shot that buck this year. Sure. And I have posted pictures of the food it's been turned into, videos of the food it's been turned into. And they still, I can't believe you would kill that thing. Like, you guys don't understand that it cost me $20 for that tag. And I got 60 pounds of venison out of it, 70 right. pounds of venison out of it.
Good, that, wholesome, clean, non-GMO meat.
Will not be beat by any supermarket
yep.
that you go to. And I don't care what anybody says. There is no meat out there as clean and pure as venison, from my understanding.
Yep.
Like, there's nothing bad about it.
Right.
And that's one thing, you know, I suffered from diverticulitis 2 years ago, and they said venison is 100% okay for me because there's no fat to break down. There's no oil in it. There's no grease in it. But stay away from pork, stay away from the big fatty steaks, because that's fat is hard for your body to digest.
Mm-hmm.
And diverticulitis is a digestion issue, and they said you eat all the venison you want. Well, that's one reason why not very many deer that make me shake walk out of my life. Right. They come home with me.
Yep.
But so this is the main event for me. Kevin, how long have we known each other? Probably for 12 years.
Oh yeah, something like that.
Ever since I've known you, I think your goal has been to kill a coyote in daylight with a 50 cal.
Yep.
And that goal has finally been achieved as of what day was that? The 16th?
Yep.
You just got it done. You just got your brass engraved. Let's hear the story on that. First off, what is your 50 cal setup?
Okay, so the rifle is actually an AR-15 conversion. It's made by Advanced Long Range Systems. So I bought this rifle, well, it was well before I met you, I'm sure. It took me like a year and a half to save up the money for it, because I want to say it's just an upper, and I got a nice match trigger with it and the bipod on it. And I want to say back then it cost me $1,500 just for the upper. I went with a dedicated lower receiver for it that would handle it better, but it's a single shot bolt action 50 BMG match rifle. This particular upper at one time held the world record for 50 caliber accuracy at 1,000 yards, this brand of upper. And that's something I like, and I have a drive for, is I like accurate guns. Mm-hmm. I don't remember who that was that quoted it, but he was an old time rifle guy, and he has a quote that a lot of people use that says only accurate rifles are interesting. I don't know if I'd push it that far, but I do like accurate rifles. Okay. So my goal originally when I wanted to buy this was to maybe someday do 1,000 yard competitions with it. 50 BMG is used frequently in the military. It was originally, if I'm correct, and someone can correct me if I'm not, it was originally designed and used, the Barrett rifles were used for explosive ordnance disposal and for use against hardened targets.
I don't know what either of those mean.
So explosive ordnance disposal, if you ever get a chance, watch the movie The Hurt Locker. What they'll do is they'll get unexploded ordnance, you know, bombs, artillery rounds, etc., whatever. And they'll put them out there and they'll shoot them with a 50 BMG with an incendiary round and blow the whole thing up. So it's disposing of unexploded ordnance.
Okay.
And then hardened targets would be obviously shooting at like an armored vehicle in military application or something like that.
And that's what you want to take coyote on, Dick.
Yeah. So then also after I got it, I actually joined the 50 caliber shooters association, because eventually I wanted to maybe do a 1,000 yard match with it. So I've been hand loading for this gun since I got it. I can actually hand load for it if I use surplus components, I can hand load for it cheaper than I can shoot like my 300 Win Mag.
Really?
Yeah. I can shoot it for about $1.50 a round with surplus components. And
can you buy 50 cal ammo anywhere?
Yes. Actually, I can find that ammo easier than I can find a lot of other ammo because there isn't nearly the demand for it.
But you don't see it like on a hardware store shelf.
No, but a lot of your big stores will have it, like Cabela's, Dunham's. Really? I'll have it occasionally.
I've never seen it.
Yep. So anyway, I got it, and all the years I've had it, I've used it for punching paper and shooting steel. Don't shoot a lot of steel with it because it kind of wrecks most of your steel targets, but just punching paper with it is a very accurate rifle. The furthest I've shot it so far has been 300 yards, and I'm getting half MOA with it at 300 yards with my hand loads. But like with almost every other gun I have, I wanted to take an animal with it. My goal was to take a coyote with it and take deer with it. Maybe a squirrel sometime. The rifle itself, the load that I'm using uses a 750 grain bullet.
God, that's okay. 10 times bigger than my 243.
Yeah.
More than 10 times bigger.
Yep. I'd have to actually put it on a scale to see what it weighs in terms of pounds. I don't know what the conversion weight is, but put it this way, it's a big piece of lead.
Yeah.
So
it's a boulder.
Yeah. Well, the round itself, when it's fully loaded, I want to say it's like 5.5 or 6 inches long, the fully loaded round. But
how much powder behind that bullet?
218 grains of powder is in that load. As a comparison, that's as much or more powder than was loaded in a hand grenade in World War I era hand grenades.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so this gun's got to be extremely loud.
Oh, yeah, very loud. When you shoot it, they recommend you have earplugs and muffs on because the brake actually sends a sound back towards you more. And it also helps reduce the recoil. The recoil on it's only about like a 12 gauge. If I remember right, the rifle weighs between 30 and 40 pounds. Most of that weight is in the barrel because it's a huge barrel.
How long is that barrel? And what twist rate is that?
Oh, sure. Ask me that question. I do not remember what the twist rate is. If I had to guess, I'd say it's probably like a 1 in 10.
Really?
Yeah.
For that heavy of a bullet?
Yeah.
So that's what I shoot. So I thought that would be like a very, very slow.
No, see, when John Moses Browning is the one that developed that round, and basically he took a 30-06 round and just made it bigger. So if I had to guess, I would say that's what it is, but I could be wrong. The barrel, I want to say 36 inches, maybe more.
It might like be an old goose shotgun.
Yeah. Probably heavier though.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I've shot nothing but paper, wanted to take game with it. The thing with this rifle, and anyone that knows anything about them, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of ranges. I was reading a post about this today. There's a lot of ranges that will not allow you to shoot a 50 at them because they can be so destructive to the backstop. And that bullet, once it keeps going, it goes for a long ways.
Yep.
When you look at a bullet, a lot of times you'll see a couple particular data points of a bullet that dictate how well that bullet performs. One is sectional density. The other one is your ballistic coefficient. Ballistic coefficient is how well a bullet will retain energy downrange or how well it bucks the wind, whatever you want to call it. But the higher the ballistic coefficient, the more energy it carries down range further out. For example, if you take even like 223, I think a lot of your 223 or 204 bullets, you might have a ballistic coefficient of down like 0.2. Okay. A good, like say a 6.5 Grendel with a 123 grain AMAX, I think the BC on that is like 0.4, 0.5. Which is considered pretty good. 6.5 bullets generally have pretty good ballistic coefficient. The 750 grain AMAX has a ballistic coefficient of 1.0 something. So over double what those other ones do.
And that's energy downrange.
and how long it holds that energy.
Okay.
So to my point, you have to be very careful about where you shoot this gun and make sure you definitely have to have a good backstop. Okay. So I really, local to me, only have one spot that I feel comfortable shooting that gun at. You've been to that spot. Someone made a comment on that about, oh, you ever heard about bullet travel? I'm like, well, I explained the setup to him. I'm actually sitting probably 10 feet or higher above the ground and shooting down into the ground.
I'd say you're at least 15 feet high, because that's way higher than a basketball hoop rim, which is 10 feet.
Right. And that's to the base where, you know, this spot I'm sitting is on, and it goes down from there. And then it's a big bowl, basically. I mean,
yeah, you're basically shooting into a
dried up lake. Yep.
So you're shooting into a pit, essentially into a gravel pit.
Yep. And I'm starting, you know, 10, 15 feet above the ground, angling down.
Yeah.
So
Kevin's not a dummy when it comes to this, but we had to, there's a lot of conversation after this that we had to be like, no, he's not shooting where it's just going to keep on freaking going.
Exactly. So anyway, I've actually, obviously we can only use it during the daylight because it's bigger than 0.269 diameter.
Like quite a bit.
Just a little bit.
Is that diameter 0.500? Is it
0.510?
Like, oh, so it 510,000.
Yes.
10,000 must be just to get the good rifle connection.
Correct.
Yep. Gotcha.
So I night hunt this spot as well. And I daytime hunt it as well. I mean, I've killed coyotes out there day and night.
More in daytime, I bet.
No. I've killed more at night. It's probably close. Probably like 70-30, 60-40.
This is where they will typically ninja you.
Oh yeah, big time. And this one did too. If I wouldn't have initially seen him in my thermal across this, the other side of this spot, I probably wouldn't have seen him until he popped out down there, because there's a lot of brown colored grass in that area.
Yep.
And as you've seen, there's like ravines that run through the bottom of it, and they'll travel that. And then all of a sudden they pop up, boom, they're right in front of you.
Yeah. And you better be quick.
Yep. But luckily there's a deer. I'll get to the whole story, but anyway, so I've hunted this spot on and off with the 50 with the goal of shooting a coyote with it. So last week, Monday, or was it Sunday? Either way, whatever day it was, weather conditions were good. It was late in the evening. I shouldn't say late in the evening. I think I got out there around 7:30.
An hour and a half early.
Yeah, I figured, well, I'll go out and give it a whirl. The wind direction's right. I actually had a camera out there for a while, seeing if there was coyote activity, and I got a couple of pictures all at night. But I knew that I could call them in out there at the day at some point. It's just a question of, you know, when would I have the 50 and call in a coyote at the same time? So I got out there, like I said, about an hour, hour and a half before dark, set up. The way I usually like to do it is I just go out there, set up, get everything set. I had the video camera next to me, had the gun on a rest, had my collar out. I was using that new Fox Pro I got.
Yeah, you... Kevin won an X24?
X2S.
Okay.
Yep. Had that out there and just chilled for a while. And I was watching for deer, because we see deer out there a lot, turkeys. I think that the video the first time you and I went out there, there was like 20 deer in that field when we went out there that evening.
There was one time we went out there and there's a big old buck down in that bottom.
There's a lot of big bucks out there. Yeah. So I set up watching and I didn't see any deer. Did a little bit of distress calling to start off. Nothing was going on. And I think it was probably about half an hour, 45 minutes before dusk, I finally decided to kick into some vocals. And I'm wearing the new ATN X sound electronic hearing protection, because they will amplify quiet sounds but cut out loud noises. And one of the challenges that I had prior to getting that was I'd be running a caller and I couldn't hear it because I had earplugs and stuff in. And that always bugged me because I like to monitor my volume. Mm-hmm. So now that I have those, I could clearly hear the caller, hear what was going on, and I still had hearing protection in. So I ran, if I remember right, I think it was a one of Heath Baker's howls. I think it was a female interrogation, if I remember right. I can't remember exactly the first couple howls I played. I'm sitting there, I ran the howl, and I'm waiting, and I'll usually wait, you know, like maybe 10 minutes before I run another one. And then I ran Ma and Pup Serenade. I remember that one specifically. And then I hear another howl, and I'm like, I'm looking at my hand. Did I bump the remote or something? I'm like, oh, crap. No, that's a coyote over there. And so I start looking, you know, I heard it. So I know where he's at. He's in the woods on the far side. And I see this deer pop up, turns, looks to my left, and takes off running. I'm like, okay, there's a coyote somewhere over there. So I'm looking. That far tree line is about 460 yards, if I remember right.
That's where you should have shot it.
I didn't want to shoot it there because that would have been at the top. That would have been a level shot, and I don't want to do that. Yep. Not only that, but I never seen it. So this deer takes off running. I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be a coyote somewhere. What's going on? You know, I waited for a little bit. Finally, I grabbed my thermal because this has helped me a couple of times now in that, because that grass and everything. I grabbed the thermal and I'm starting to scan. I'm like, boom, okay, he's already out in the field down in the, like, part way down the hill on the far side.
Was it moving when you saw it?
No, he was sitting down.
Okay.
So I hit Tony Tebby's Pup Buffet and boom. I mean, he was coming he was coming fast. So he came down. The bottom down there is right about 200 yards in the very bottom, which is what I have the gun zeroed in at right now. My goal was to shoot him down there. He never stopped. He just hauled butt straight up across. So I'm sitting, like we said before, 10 to 15 feet up, drops down, slopes down. Then there's another drop off and it goes down low. So he skirted a couple of trees and brush down there where I couldn't get a shot. And then he got to that drop off and just completely disappeared. Now I'm like, crap, where's he going to pop up at? Well, as we've seen with that one that you shot out there, and I've had him do it before, they usually come up underneath that drop off. They skirt to the left. They pop up right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I figured he was going to do, and sure enough, that's what he did. Well, he popped up probably 20 feet from that collar, 50 yards in front of me. I've never shot that gun at that range. The closest I've shot it was 100 yards.
Okay. So were you sitting down holding the gun, or were you?
Well, I have it on a rest.
Okay. So you weren't laying prone, though, trying to do this?
No, prone would be a pain in the butt for doing that with how coyotes move. So, no, I was sitting down. Had the gun resting. But again, I mean, I actually had to kind of come up to get that angle to get down because he was that close. So he popped up at 50 yards and I'm thinking, well, I'm just going to hold on where I normally would at 100. I shot and I'd seen him flop over, feet go in the air. He twitched once and that was it. Done.
So, what scope do you have on that gun?
I have a Bushnell Elite 3200. I think it's a 4-16 power mil dot reticle.
Is that specifically made to handle that much recoil? Because that's a lot of recoil.
No, it's not. Well, I mean, I don't know what that scope is rated up to. I don't know. I mean, it worked good. I've had it on there for years.
What would you compare the recoil of that gun to? It's got to be
12 gauge.
That's it?
Yep.
With a 2¾, 3-inch, 3.5?
2¾, 3-inch, somewhere in there.
Well, that's not nearly as bad as I thought it was.
Mm-mm. Because that muzzle brake takes off 75% of the recoil.
Oh, and I've seen videos of you guys shooting it and your daughter shooting it, and there's like wind that blows through like a tornado all of a sudden as soon as you shoot.
There's a video on my business page, a YouTube video. I took it out and shot it at the range, and on the benches on either side of me, I had some paper targets sitting there, and it blew the paper targets right off the bench.
And that's on Tools of the Trade?
Yeah, TOTTSS.com.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I mean, I've taken it to the range before, and there's been other guys out there shooting already, and I'll just stand there and wait for them to leave. It was kind of funny because the last time I did that over at the club, guy was sitting there shooting, and I was standing there. He turns and looks at me. He says, "You gonna shoot?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna wait till you're done." "Oh no, you're fine. You can shoot." I said, "No, I'll wait till you're done." You can go ahead and get set up. I said, all right, I'll get set up. I walk back, grab this thing, set it down. He looks at me and his eyes got kind of big. He's like, okay. And I waited for him to get done. So he left the range, went out to, he has a trailer out there. He must have been staying there. Goes out to his trailer. And once I, range was clear, I went ahead and shot. And after that first shot, he comes out, says, holy crap, I'm glad you did wait. Because it is extremely loud. It usually draws a lot of attention. But anyway, so I went down, and if you go back on the page, you can see the live video from where I did the recovery of the coyote. I went down there. There's, what the heck, I'll say his name. Keith Warren did a video up at Legends Ranch up here. I don't know how long ago it was. It's been a few years, but he shot at a deer at Legends Ranch, claims that he missed it and still killed the deer, and says the shockwave of the bullet going past it killed it. I'm here to tell you that's a load of horse pucky. It's been disproved by a couple of different YouTube videos of guys that went out. One guy did cards stacked on top of each other, like a card house, shot through it, nothing happened. Another guy stacked up red solo cups, shot in between them, nothing happened. Well, everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, but I bet you 80 to 90% of the people that when I tell them I'm going to shoot an animal with this gun say, is there going to be anything left?
Yep.
And my thought was that all I'd get was a half inch hole through and through. And that's exactly what happened on this coyote. It was a half inch hole, went straight through. And my next goal with this rifle is to get a deer with it. And I think it'll have about the same performance on a deer. I actually have a picture saved on my computer of a guy that shot a deer with this same rifle at almost a mile. And all it was a half inch hole straight through. So I really think when I get the opportunity to shoot a deer, it's probably going to be about the same effect. Now, the reason that is because I'm not using a hunting bullet.
Yeah.
750 grain AMAX has a aluminum pointed tip on it. It's not a hollow point. It's not designed to expand. So I really think that even on a deer, I'm probably just going to get a half inch hole straight through it.
What we should do is find a metal detector, because you could see where the bullet went through and went into the ground.
Yeah.
Was that at enough of an angle that it should be in that ground right there? It almost should be.
It should be. Yeah.
We should find it sometime.
I could do that. I got a metal detector here. We could go out and see if we can find it. I have recovered 50 cal bullets before out of the target berms, but mainly that's been military surplus ammo, and I found them where they like separated the jacket from the core, separated, and then one of the cheap ammos to shoot is actually armor piercing rounds. Yep. So they have a steel core, and I've found the steel core in the target berms separated from the bullet too. So it's kind of cool to find that stuff and see what it actually does when it hits something. But
yeah, because I've seen that argument every time you've talked about it. It's the same thing. You're going to cut it in half or the hole's going to be huge. And every single time you've told them, no, it's not. It's going to be a small hole out. And I mean, you didn't skin that one, right?
No, I didn't. I probably should have. I thought about it, but
Wonder what the internal, like there had to have been a shockwave.
Well, put it this way. When I picked it up and did one of these, it sounded like a sack of Jell-O.
Mm.
So yeah, it was slushy sounding.
So once again, this animal suffered a very quick, humane, never even felt a thing death.
Like I said, I watched it through the scope and its legs twitched like once, which it's funny because I show people the exit wound on that coyote and people say, wow, that's less damage than with, my blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I've seen less damage I've seen more damage from a 204 or a 223 even than
you've external seen some damage. Mine.
Yeah. Than you did with a 50 cal. It was a quick, efficient kill. There's no doubt about it. And someone asked me, well, was it fur friendly? I'm like, actually it was.
Yeah. You could have fixed that.
I could have sold. Well, my taxidermist could have sewed that one up. Yeah. No problem at all.
That was a male, right?
Yes. And he was super aggressive when he came in. You know, he vocalized from the woods on the far side, came out, sat down, was looking. I hit that pup buffet and he came in like crazy fast. So the only bad thing about that hunt, and I'm going to try it again because I want to get the whole thing on video next time.
It was close.
That's one thing that is a challenge during the daytime is getting good video, because running a separate video camera and trying to stay on a gun and get a shot on something, especially that close, is really hard to do.
Yeah. Shout out to John Collins again, because he does a lot of it and he does damn good at it.
Yep. So, I mean, we've done it before. You've done it. I've done it. We have done it before, but
it's hard.
This particular case, that coyote came in so fast. I tried. When I went back and looked at the video footage too, I also caught on video this coyote coming across that top of the field on the far side.
So he was for sure up in those woods. He wasn't just down in that bottom.
Correct. Yeah, because when he howled, he's in the woods. But when I reviewed the footage, I seen him come across that two track, and then you could see him come down the hill on the far side. And then I tried to get the camera on him as he came down through the bottom. I didn't get any of that, but I just at the very bottom of the screen on the camera, you can see his head bounce across in front of me just before I shot him. But I mean, not enough to even tell that was the coyote, but I know it was.
Yeah. And
you see it go, you know, from right to left when he stopped right in front of me. Perfect broadside shot at like 50 yards.
See, now when you're sitting where you sit,
mm-hmm.
if you look straight out, I shot mine right behind that like fencing with the black stuff up along it.
Yep.
Wasn't that in your live video? I'm pretty positive I saw that exact piece of fencing right there somewhere.
Probably.
So we had to have shot them. I mean, I shot mine out there, 7 years ago? Long time ago.
Yep.
In dang near the exact same spot.
Yep.
And it approached probably from about the exact same
way. That's one thing that gets me about that spot, because like I said, they blend in so well with that grass and the brush that's out there. It very well could have came from the same spot far across, because to be honest with you, with that grass and the sand and everything else, it's hard to spot a coyote at 400 and some yards.
Now that being spot them at 100 from there.
Right. And that being said, though, it could have came from the right and just followed those washes and then just popped up.
The one I shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Could have done either one, but it's hard to say because I killed, one or two out there last year in the daytime in my 204 when I first got it. And again, on that one, if I wouldn't have looked with the thermal, I probably wouldn't have seen it. Coyote was already sitting out there just looking and, you know, switch up sounds. Here it comes, boom, shoot them, you know, but
our eyes here though, in Michigan, they're not trained for that kind of terrain really. Like that terrain there is the most out west looking spot I've ever been to in this state.
Yep. And I've taken, you know, a couple other people out there too, and they all say the same thing. It says, this looks like it's out west because it's such a big area and it has a lot of that same type of stuff, grass, sand, you know? Yeah, it is. And it's been a very productive spot for me in terms of coyote hunting. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to hunt that piece.
Yeah.
And I'm the only person that can hunt it. I love hunting out there.
Yeah. It's a good piece. So, well, congratulations on filling that bucket list, but next time you go and sometime I'll make it up there and just film you or something,
right?
But we can do a daylight set with your 50 and then roll into darkness.
Right.
Carter hasn't hardly asked to go. I haven't hardly wanted to go. I did go out, what night was it? I showed you the video Saturday night. I went out for a couple spots because I wasn't going to be able to wake up and go fishing. I had vocals probably within 300-400 yards on the first spot I went. Nothing ever showed up. And then about an hour after I left there, the guy texted me and said, dude, the coyotes are going nuts out here. I'm like, yeah, I'm already home eating chips or something, eating ice cream at 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't see anything, but we've been fishing a bunch and the coyotes I know are going to be there. Honestly, for me right now, I feel like the population is somewhat under control a little bit.
Right.
I don't hear hardly at all anymore that coyotes are causing problems for people, any of my landowners, at least. Do you?
Yes and no. I've been starting to get more calls lately.
Probably because of the time of year.
Of people seeing them and hearing them. Matter of fact, I have to move my game camera. I had just put that Reveal X out at a farm where the lady was losing chickens and ducks.
Yep.
I had it out there for 2-3 weeks, never caught a predator on it. Well, now her neighbor sent a picture yesterday of something definitely digging, trying to get dig underneath her chicken coop. So she asked me to come put the camera out there and see if we can identify what's trying to get into her chickens now. I told her I'd get out there this week. I have to go pull the camera from where I moved it to and then bring it over there. But I'm going to set it up out there and see if we can identify what's trying to get her chickens now. I picked up.
Digging under the fence, what do you think that's going to be? I got a feeling that's going to be a possum or a coon or something.
Fox.
You think?
The reason I think it's a fox is because that particular piece of property, last time I hunted it before it changed hands, I videoed, I had 5 fox, young kits.
Oh, I know this property.
Yep. And when she first moved in there, after she picked up the property, there was a den still underneath that barn, which is where I put a camera before and had pictures of them coming in and out of there. Well, she worked on that barn, so they moved their den from there. And I'm guessing they didn't move it very far away. And I'm thinking that's probably still a fox there.
Well, no.
And she has seen a fox in the daylight cross that field once.
Yeah. Well, and for Michigan people, we can't do anything about that right now until October 15th.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd have to go get permits and everything. Fox are technically a protected species in the off season, right?
Yes.
Federally.
You're not allowed to, huh?
I don't know if it's federally or if it's just statewide.
That's state.
Okay.
You're not allowed to take fox or bobcat out of season without a permit from a DNR biologist or be a licensed nuisance animal control person.
Even if they've killed every one of your chickens, correct, you still cannot do anything about it, right, until you get permission.
And bears are that way too. Matter of fact, I just had a landowner contact me here a couple of weeks ago. They have a bear that's been coming up on their porch in the daylight, and they're worried about kids and small animals. They called the DNR out. DNR officer told them, you have to remove everything that would be attracting that bear. Bird feeders, trash, any type of food source, then it should go away. It didn't go away. It's still coming back. So I actually reached out to a DNR officer that I know and explained the situation to her. And she told me, she says, the wildlife division actually does not like to trap and relocate bears. And like I told this lady, I said, because all that does makes them become someone else's problem.
Yeah.
Not only that, but bears will travel a long ways. And if he really liked hanging out there, he may very well just travel right back there, even from a long ways away. A
couple of days, he's back on the porch, knocking right on the door like, hey.
Right. You know, that happened just before we went out to Wyoming last time. Buck Wells was telling us about it. There was a sow with 3 cubs that was hanging around in town in Cody. And it was becoming to be a problem. And they tried hazing it. And eventually the Fish and Wildlife Division out there caught him, tranquilized him or trapped him, either way, relocated him. He told me where it was. It was quite a ways away. I'm thinking it was about a month later, that same sow and 3 cubs came back, was in the same area, and they had to euthanize all of them. And which that's another.
That's sad.
It is. And that's another thing that the tree huggers don't realize is that, you know, especially animals like bears and stuff like that, if they want to come back, they can come back and they will. And relocation is either going to do one of 2 things. Either the animal's just going to come back or it's going to become someone else's problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you hear people talk about, oh, let's just trap the coons and move them over here. Well, yeah, you let them go over there and they're going to go do the same thing over there that they were doing back here. They're going to find, because people leave trash out, they have bird feeders. They're going to come back and they're going to start messing with it there. They're going to find another place and, like I said, become someone else's problem.
See, and I don't know the 100% written law on it, but I thought it was illegal to live trap a problem animal and relocate it to anywhere. But That's all I ever see some of these rehab places doing is going and dropping them off at random freaking places, it seems like.
I guess I haven't seen that. I know I see people talk about it all the time, yeah. But can't
well,
say
that's it. What I mean. People yeah. always bring it up with somebody will trap it or this guy will trap it and relocate. And it's right. like, I didn't think you could do that.
Now see, for example, Carl Johnson with Great Lakes Animal Nuisance Animal Control Company. He's actually based out of Muskegon here. I see him because he's licensed, he can do that. And I see him trap a lot of animals, but I don't know what he ends up doing with them. If I don't know if you under that license can relocate them, if they give you specific places to relocate them, or if he has to dispatch the animals, I don't know. That's something I'd be kind of curious to find out from him, how he actually deals with those animals that he traps.
I mean, in my opinion, I'd think that any animal that gets accustomed to doing certain things for a reason, like coming to a spot for food, it's just going to keep on doing it that
way. Oh, exactly. I mean, that's why you go around these places, for example, up in the UP, where we bear hunt, or other areas too, you go there, they have signs, do not feed the bears, you know, take care of your trash, do this, do that, because they don't want them to become accustomed to being around humans, coming in and getting that, you know, that food source or whatever, because then they lose their fear of people and you have the risk of a potentially really bad situation.
Yeah, now person means possibility of something good.
Right. I mean, yeah, not only that, but let's say, you know, the bear's thinking you're going to get a snack and you don't have a snack, you know, what's going to happen?
Now
then?
You are the snack.
The snack. That's why actually out in Wyoming, they actually have laws. They'll fine you if they find out you have food in your camp out in Wyoming. You have to have your food like 250 yards away, and they will actually, at like areas where people might camp, they have these, it looks almost like a buck pole. It's a huge pole that's probably like 10, 15 feet in the air, and that's what you're supposed to hang your food from. Anything that wouldn't be secured in something.
Like a cooler and everything you'd have to throw up on a rope or something?
Oh yeah, they will destroy a cooler in a heartbeat, because you're talking grizzlies out there.
I wrestled one of them.
Yeah, for sure. I bet. Yeah.
I woke up after that.
Betty Ruxpin doesn't count.
Oh, well, boy.
That's something that I didn't know until we were out there last time and we seen the signs. And they're saying, yeah, it's a pretty stiff fine if you get caught having food around a camp out there in bear country.
I mean, I would think a fine. You wouldn't need a fine if a bear ripped into your camp, scared the shit out of you while you were trying to sleep because you had food there. You probably wouldn't need a fine. That'd probably be good enough.
Right. And but the unfortunate thing is there's been, even this year, I think there's already been a couple of maulings or people yeah. killed out there. Well, there was just one, I think I posted it on the page, where actually this was up in Alaska, a military service member that was out doing training in Alaska was killed by a bear. And it's funny, I mean, it's not funny, but if you read the article, they were hunting in an area that's considered like a landfill, or they're not hunting. They were performing their training in this area that's considered like a landfill area. And I don't know if, I don't remember if it was a sow with cubs or what it was, but yeah. U.S. military service member was killed by a bear during training up in Alaska.
Do you remember Rick's bear, Rick Paulette, Lucky Duck?
Yeah, that huge
brown bear. Brown bear, right? Or Kodiak?
That thing was a tank.
That thing's paw was like bigger than my face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would not want to mess with a bear of any kind.
You know, here's another example. I mean, all it takes is for you to have a little bit of food out. And a lot of people that aren't accustomed to wild animals aren't aware of that. So here's an example. I used to train in the martial arts all the time. And me and another guy went to an Aikido seminar that was actually down in Indiana, right by the bottom of Lake Michigan. It was either Indiana or Ohio. I don't remember which it was. Anyway, the guy I went over there with was from down by Grand Rapids. He was a city guy, right? He was a wrestling coach, trained in martial arts. And he's like, hey, let's go to the seminar. It was at a campground that was right by the lake. So we get there to the campground. We had brought a tent. We set the tent up. put our stuff in it, and right away we're going to begin training. So the first thing we did for training is we got all our stuff together. We ran, I don't know, however far it was to the lake. We trained in the surf. We trained running the dunes. We trained doing all this stuff well in the dark. Get back, and it's starting to rain. We get back to our campsite, and I look at our tent, and it is shredded.
Oh, and really?
There's crap all over the place.
Crap, and bear crap, or crap as in
camping? Oh, crap as in everything tore apart.
Yep.
You know, tent was ripped open, everything inside was ripped apart and everything. And I looked at the guy, I think his name was Dave, and I said, "Dave, did you leave any food in the tent?" "Well, I had my sub sandwich from Subway in there." And I'm like, "Oh Lord." Raccoons is what it come to find out. But even those
Really?
Oh yeah. They shredded the tent, got in there, ate his sub sandwich and everything else they could get their little paws on, made a mess. We ended up having to sleep in the car, put it that way. And the next morning we're like, screw this, we're going home. But, you know, just a lot of people don't take that into account, how well these animals smell. They realize that, especially a campground, something like that, they know there's going to be easy pickings.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll come in there all the time. And, you know, that's where the potential for a bad human-animal interaction can happen, because they're accustomed to the people. You know, you have someone that scares an animal, or, you know, they have their little toy dog that decides to think it's tough. And now you have a raccoon dog fight and the person tries to get involved and everyone gets bit and unhappy, or, you know, bears, whatever, you know, just there's a lot of that potential when the animals get used to that.
Yeah. And then you got the guys like us that shoot poor defenseless little animals, and you're welcome.
Right.
All right, Kevin. Well, number one, congratulations on your bucket list 50 cal coyote.
Thank you.
That we should link to the video. We'll link to the video in the description of this podcast. But I've taken up almost an hour and a half of your night. It is time for me to go get a shower and hop in bed so I can get back up and do it all over again tomorrow. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you listen this far, please like, subscribe, share it with your friends. We appreciate everybody who continues listening, continues following with us.
I'll just add one more thing. If you have suggestions of something you'd like to hear on the podcast, let us know, or suggestions for guests. We're always looking for more people to have on here and talk about stuff that you guys want to hear.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We'll talk to y'all later.